Hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of The Naturalist Capitalist. Just before we get going, as always, I want to plug my friend Will Bell's Rabbit Eye Blueberry Wine. You can find that on the internet. It's good stuff, and he'll ship it to you. I'm not really much of an alcohol drinker, but he's kind of got me hooked again. Anyways, on the other end tonight, I've got my friend Dave Smith. How you doing tonight, Dave?
I'm good, brother. Good to be with you.
Yeah, so I want to talk about libertarian culture and like trying to, you know, give a common cause for people to get around. But before that, I just wanted to, have you been following the Maxwell trial at all? Or do you know much about that? So, or what have your thoughts been on that?
I've been trying to read up on it where I can. I don't have, I don't know if I have anything that unique to say about it. I mean, it's annoying, you know, that we can't have like cameras in the courtroom and you actually have to go off kind of like these secondhand reports. But I think so far my take on it has been kind of what we knew already. I mean, it's appalling. If we lived in a moral society with any type of like, not even like a good press corps or something like that, but just like a somewhat competent, not evil, satanic corporate press, this would be like the number one story all over the place that so many high profile people are implicated in this. But that was already true with the Jeffrey Epstein scandal. I don't know that, like, I mean, I know the pilot testified and gave some names, but it was kind of all the names we already knew from what I've seen. It seems to me like this is going to go very bad for her. The prosecution is basically making a pretty solid case that she was not just like a person around when this happened, but that she was intimately involved, that she was herself abusing girls, that she was recruiting girls, that she was doing basically everything evil you could do. And the defense so far seems to be like, oh, these girls are having false memory and there's, you know, there's money involved in all of this. But the problem is that the girls already got the money, so they have no incentive anymore to lie. I mean, I think there's been some wild conspiracy shit going on that I don't think is quite true. I don't think those like CEO resignations had anything to do with this trial. But it is, I mean, look, again, I think we're kind of right back to what we knew already with the Jeffrey Epstein stuff, which is that this reeks of some type of deep state operation. I don't know if it's a given whether it was CIA or Mossad or what. I think probably Mossad is the most likely, but I don't know that we know that for sure. But like, look, I mean, I just know about the guy that, like, you know, Jeffrey Epstein goes from like teaching at Dalton, which is like this crazy elite school, to like rising up the ranks. I think he made partner at Bear Stearns within a couple years, which makes no sense at all, to all of the sudden being this guy who's like got ungodly amounts of money that no one really knows where he got it from. Seems to be off only a couple investors. Then he's friends with all of the bigwigs. He's got cameras throughout his house, so he's inviting people, running this ring, letting them have sex with or whatever, get massages from underage girls, then recording them doing it. They also retrieved a Saudi passport from him. Again, this is all just the stuff we knew from Epstein originally. So I haven't, you know, it is to me kind of exactly what it is, but there, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong and I just haven't seen this yet, but I don't know. You tell me, like, has there been some crazy revelation from this trial that's like, oh shit, this is so much worse than we knew it was? Or is it just kind of like basically what we knew with Epstein?
Well, I, you know, being friends with Ryan, I kind of hear about this stuff all the time. So like, it's kind of like the Rittenhouse thing. You know, a lot of people were shocked at what they were hearing. And to some of us, it was like, yeah, you didn't know that already. You know, I think it's kind of similar to that. But with the Epstein thing, it's, you know, I was talking about it last week and then this weekend. And then I said something about it yesterday that kind of blew up and people were like, why are you talking about this? Like, we all agree. We all think it's bad. And it's like, yeah, but I don't think the average person knows anything about it. Like, you know, all these Republicans saying Jeffrey Epstein didn't kill himself. It's like, okay, yeah, but do you know, like, anything beyond that he had Bill Clinton on his island once? Or is that, like, the only level, you know, yeah. You know, like, the motivations behind why they had all these rings. You know, it wasn't just like debaucherous pleasure that they would get people to pay them for. Like there was some, like you said, some deep state connections that are really fucked up. So I just wish more people knew about it, I guess. That's been my biggest takeaway from it.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. And I think that like in many ways, it's like it's kind of a double-edged sword when you start to get into these stories, because it's like, well, okay, you want people to know like truly how evil the system is and how it really works, which is so far removed from how the average American thinks of the system working. You know what I mean? Like, and the truth is that a lot of people at the very highest, like upper echelons of power, have been compromised. And of course they have. Like, why wouldn't they? Why, what would you think? We have these organizations and no one's thought to do that. You know what I mean? Like, people are flawed, and many, and this is like the perfect compromise mechanism. I mean, you find someone who's like all you really need is a horny guy, and then you get a 16-year-old who looks like she's 20, and you know what I mean? Get him on tape. Like, I mean, this is perfect. Like, it's the perfect operation to control a powerful person. But so you want to expose that to people, but at the same time, there is something about this stuff where, like, you know, you do come off sounding like I would always rather like just talk about how, like, you know, how many people are benefiting from like the people making money off the vaccine mandates and how corrupt like the lockdowns were and how much they didn't work and all of this stuff. And that, because if I'm just talking about Bilderberg all day, I think there's so many people who can just dismiss you as like, oh, this is like loony conspiracy stuff. And even if it is real, and a lot with a lot of that stuff, we don't exactly know how real it is. Like, we know it exists, but we don't know exactly to what level it's controlling things. And I always kind of err on the side of like, I'd like to reach the most amount of people and point them in the right direction. And so I guess it's a calculation you have to make. But I just haven't seen anything like the, I guess my disappointment in the trial so far is like the hype was like, oh, well, they killed this Epstein guy because if it went to trial, everything would be exposed. And so far what I'm seeing out of this is like, okay, we got a list. Like, the pilot testified that all these people were on his plane, but like, didn't we already kind of know that?
Yeah,
I don't know. So someone tell me what's the smoking gun, and I'll be happy to know. But
yeah, I agree. It hasn't been like shocking new information. It's just been that nobody knows anything about it. It's interesting what you were just saying there about how if you forego a certain audience, it's actually beneficial in the long run. And I've kind of been that way too. I don't have near the audience you do, but like, I could have really gotten on the anti-vaccine train. You know, I'm like, I'm anti-mandate, but I'm not a doctor. I can look at the data and I can see that I think they're exaggerating a lot of shit and they're not telling us the truth. But there are a lot of people who just go down this rabbit trail of stuff that a lot of them don't know anything about, actually. And they're just like, when you do that, you just become almost the same as the CNN puppets who are just spouting whatever they hear, because you've just become, you know, you're not really looking at information. You're not thinking critically. You're just stating a narrative that you believe in. And I don't know, like, that's just not what I'm interested in doing.
Yeah. Well, I also think, and I don't even mean to like, I'm not saying this is anything like noble about me, but I think it probably has to do with like a mix of like narcissism and insecurity, but I don't like to be proven wrong. So I try not to say things that someone could be like, oh, actually you got that completely wrong. You know what I mean? And I see a lot of people when they go down that road, they start to get sloppy and just do things that you're like, oh dude, you're just, and then there's a real danger to that. Like, you don't want to like, and I feel like, especially at this point in my career, I feel like a pressure that it's like, I don't know, dude, I don't want to like discredit the movement. Right. So I don't want to like, I got to really know what I'm saying before I go out on a limb and say it. I got to like really feel like, okay, I can really argue this. I'm not going to like make some like extraordinary claim. And then someone goes, well, no, this is stupid. That's not at all what happened. And then I got to go like, all right, well, it's the, you know, I don't like that stuff. And that's, by the way, you know, and everyone's always like, because I was like, I've listen to his show like back in the day and stuff, everyone's always like, oh, Alex Jones was right and Alex Jones was right. And like, yeah, dude, there's a lot of shit he was right about, but you are overlooking a mountain of things that he was dead wrong about. Exactly. Just like embarrassingly wrong, and never even really like had like a fucking, oh yeah, okay, listen, I got that completely wrong. Just moved on right to the next shit. I mean, yeah. so many
he didn't have documents is what you're saying. He didn't actually have them.
I mean, he might have had them, but they were like, you know what I mean, like they were written up by a staffer or they were written up by like a crackhead or something. I don't know, they weren't, the documents were not accurate if he did have them.
Yeah, so what I want to talk about tonight for the most part is, you know, libertarian culture. And what I mean by that is kind of building our own thing, because there's like right-wing culture and there's left-wing culture. And I mean, I feel a little more comfortable in right-wing culture, but both of them are kind of ridiculous right now. I mean, one is just pushing back against the other. And it seems like it's kind of always been that way, like one is pushing against whichever culture is dominant and then the other one pushes back. And I don't really give a shit that much. Like, I'm not really a culture warrior. I kind of want people to just leave each other alone. And I realize there are going to be things that are important to other people that aren't important to me, and that's cool. And, you know, other people realize that those same things aren't important to me and they're cool with that. That's the type of people I like. But it seems like we need some sort of cultural thing that brings us together, because the libertarian movement, even though we might agree on ideas, we just don't have anything that gives us glue to keep us together. You know, like you see the left kind of gather around whatever, and then you see the right sort of do the same thing. And that's been a big debate with the Praxians versus the libertarians, is, you know, we have something that can actually bond people together. I don't know, like, I think it's possible for libertarians to have their own culture, and, you know, something that's really stupid, but has kind of brought that out, has been Tower Gang. And I know you just tweeted out yesterday that you endorse it. I mean, it's the most retarded thing ever, but you've got a bunch of people who, you know, don't have the same religious beliefs, don't have the same cultural backgrounds, but we all just get together and have fun.
Yeah.
Look at the audience who watches it, is all sorts of different people. And then, you know, Porkfest was another place where I really saw that. Like, there was not a cultural consistency as far as the people who were there, but they all just cared about freedom and liberty. So do you think freedom and liberty, like, it can be a culture, or do you think it has to end up being a religious thing or a right or left thing? Or what do you think?
Well, it's an interesting question. It's a very deep question. And so it's hard to like answer in like a simple bumper sticker form, right? So so first of all, with like the tower like culture or whatever, I mean, to me, that's like, that is at least a slice of American culture, which is just like the culture I grew up in. And it's funny, it's really like unbelievable to see, like today, like a generation who grew up on like, you know, The Simpsons and Family Guy and South Park and like all of this, be like, oh my God, like an offensive joke or something. It's like, yeah. What? But you're pretending you don't know what's going on here? Like, I just don't, I'm baffled by that. And so that to me is like, I just, like, it's not only do I get it, I don't believe that others don't get it. You know what I mean? Like, I think you all get it, and you're just pretending not to in order to have like these kind of virtue points or something, because that's this new culture that's swept in, the kind of woke culture like thing of like, you know, like, oh, I can be outraged and then get like some type of social credit for that, some type of social currency for my, you know, virtue signaling. I do think you're right that amongst libertarians in general, within the liberty movement, one of the most beautiful aspects is that it really does bring people together of many different cultures. And I think that was true back at the old like Ron Paul rallies, where you would see these, like, it was unbelievable. Like, it was so freaking cool at the time, where you'd realize it was like, oh, all of these culture things like could be so artificial, because look, here at this Ron Paul rally, you have John Birchers in like a suit and tie. And then you have like some Christian conservatives, you know, and then you have like some like the psychedelic community. And then you have like these fucking like anti-war progressives. And then you have, and they're all together just chanting like President Paul, you know, and they're all together on the idea that we should be free. Like it's almost like, and that's what you see at Porkfest, that what binds us together is not that we're all right wingers or left wingers, which in itself is like, there's a lot more cultures than that, right? Like, it's not as if Florida and Utah have the same culture, or that LA and New York have the same culture. They don't. There's many cultural differences between them. But at Porkfest, what's binding everyone together is like a philosophical belief. So that is true to an extent within the liberty movement. Now, can that be extrapolated to an entire nation? I'm skeptical of the idea. I'm really skeptical. I mean, this is like one of the things that Stefan Molyneux back in the day, before he kind of evolved on these issues, used to say, is that, you know, we kind of get rid of religion, and then what binds everyone together is philosophy.
Mm-hmm. Not with the people who exist today.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it almost like, it just, to me, starts to come down to this almost like kind of communist, like, well, you know, it's like when the communists would get challenged on like the incentive problem. This used to be back in the day. This was like when, you know, the Soviet Union was still around and shit. This is like, was one of the major criticisms of them. They'd be like, well, why, if everyone's getting paid equal and everyone's like an equal owner of society, who wants to be the garbage man? Wouldn't we all rather be a painter? You know what I mean? Like then the guy, and you'd be like, there's this incentive problem. And their response was like, well, we're going to create this new socialist man who cares more about his community than his own incentives. And you're like, all right. But with really actually existing people, that's a bit of a problem. So again, to me, you're like, okay, it's like the old George Carlin bit where he goes, you think about how dumb the average person is, and then realize that half the population is dumber than him. Like, I don't know that the average person with like 100 IQ or an 80 IQ, you know, for the other half, are going to be bound together by philosophy. I don't know how much philosophy really does for them. And I think even some really smart people just aren't that interested in it. And so I think probably you're going to have, you know, cultural norms that bind people together. And then the question after that becomes, well, what cultural norms are capable of sustaining a libertarian order? And that, to me, I think probably you're going to do better if you err on the side of what's tried and true. And that doesn't mean you have to be a religious person, but yeah, I mean, the vast, vast, vast majority are of people throughout human history, and even in the current day, are either religious people, or they are people who have rejected religion and found some other religion to be their religion. That's the vast, vast majority of people. And I'm talking like 99%, like at least. There are some people who are like true atheists who, like, you know what I mean? Like they don't have anything that they worship, but it is a really small percentage. So I think probably there has to be some type of common religion to bind a culture together. And that has to at least be respected. Not that you have to believe in it yourself. But I think that, you know, particularly for a libertarian order, I think if we're not going to have, like, as Jeff Dice says, if we're not going to have this external government, there have to be some forms of internal government. There has to be some sense of like family and community and like, you know, voluntary organizations like that. And I do not think that the idea of like, I know people get angry at me when I use the term degenerate, so I'm trying to think of a different term. But to just be blatantly, Hoppianly honest about it, that I don't think that embracing high time preference behaviors are going to be a great culture that mixes with libertarianism. And I don't mean that in like some traditional right wing way. I'm not a traditionalist at all. I mean, like, I'm a stand-up comedian whose friends are all like maniacs and stuff like that. But I still think within that world, you can find more sustainable ways of living.
Yeah. It's funny. I was actually talking to my dad, and as you know, I was brought up in a really Christian household, and you know, I'm an atheist, and he's falling away from Christianity. And he was talking to me about like how sick of the church he is, and like how he thinks it's all like, he's starting to really question all of it. And I've almost like, I mean, I'm not thinking of becoming religious, but I have kind of like what you're describing. I've realized that, I don't know. I mean, it's weird because there are a lot of religious people who have multiple gods, you know, they'll be Christians or whatever, but then they definitely worship other things on top. Sure. But just this like complete void of morality or standards or any sort of foundation has created a society where you can't even have a discussion anymore. You know, like doing this is fun with libertarians and people who actually think, but if you try to have a discussion with just your average guy on the side of the road, half the time you're trying to define terms because all the words are completely meaningless now. And then once you actually define your words, then you're trying to set some sort of standard and nobody cares. They're like, oh, okay, that got proven wrong, whatever. You know, nobody cares. So I've actually, I mean, I understand the populist argument that you're not going to convince people logically to become libertarians or to care about freedom or to just leave other people alone. You have to tug at their heartstrings. And the weird thing is Ron Paul sort of did both. Like he had libertarian populism, which is what I think we need again. You know, like I don't feel like the Trump populism really encouraged any sort of freedom. Like it encouraged some distrust of the government on some levels, but for the most part, it didn't really push us in the right direction. Ron Paul captured people's attention and captured their hearts, but he also would tell them like, look, this is stupid and this is why it's stupid, and then it would make sense to people. So like, how do we do that again? Because this is something else I want to talk about, like, because you know, Ron Paul is he's old, and he's not going to run again, and his son was not the same he was. And even if we have another figure who's like Ron Paul, it seems like we need almost like a more decentralized approach now. Like, I don't know if there's ever going to be like do you think there is going to be like one person like you or whoever, you know, could actually bring a revival like that again? Do you think it's going to be centralized like that? Or do you think it has to be kind of like, you know, kind of like what DeSantis is doing, but on a libertarian stage instead? Like, he is inspiring people in Florida, but you could have someone in some area of the country that's really inspiring people by what they're doing. I'm kind of rambling now, but what do you think about
I don't, I mean, it's not impossible that we would find another Ron Paul, but it's really unlikely. And it's unfortunate, but that's just the reality of the situation. The guy was truly just incredible. And that just can't be overstated enough. And I hate, by the way, it bothers me so much when people do this thing where they're like, oh, you know, this is the problem. Everyone like hero worships Ron Paul, or it's this like cult of personality or something like that. And like, that really bothers me. And it's not, look, there's no, it's not like hero worship. By the way, this is something not exclusively, but there's a reason why like the Biggest Losers out there always use that term, because it's very comforting to just kind of be like, oh yeah, that's so lame that you really respect someone for all of their accomplishments or something. I'm like, no one's saying Ron Paul was never wrong about anything. I mean, like, look, I'm an anarchist and he's a minarchist, and there's probably a bunch of things that we don't completely agree on and stuff, but like, great men should be revered. That's like that's what's correct. That's what like decent people do. And that's what like drives others to aspire to do something great. And Ron Paul was a great man. And there's nothing wrong with saying that. There's nothing like anti-libertarian. There's nothing cultish about that. I'm not going to like move to his land to worship him and like fight. You know, it's just like, the fact is like, no, I'm certainly not that guy. And I don't know if anyone else is going to be, but I'm not as good a person, as smart a person, or as like, Ron Paul was a guy who was a baby doctor who delivered thousands of babies. And that's why he was so respected within his community. And that's why he was able to get that that House seat, even being such a radical libertarian in like the reddest district in Texas, and could still be, you know, for legalizing all drugs. And even though they could try to demonize him, it was like, yeah, I don't care, because Ron Paul delivered my brother's kid. And I know. And so he was a doctor, like a very accomplished doctor who knew more about monetary policy and foreign policy and military history and just everything about the inner workings of, you know, politics and economics and all of this than anybody else. Like, that's incredible. And then on top of all of that, on top of being such a like brilliant, accomplished person, was so incredibly principled that he could go to Washington, D.C. and be the only guy in the House of Representatives who had the reputation that after, I'm sure this wasn't true for his first couple of years, but the thing in Washington that was like this thing that everyone knew was that lobbyists didn't approach Ron Paul. They didn't even talk to him. He was the only guy in Congress who lobbyists didn't even attempt to corrupt, because they knew it. And mm-hmm. You can only imagine, right? Like, with the first couple of years Ron Paul was in Congress, what it was like when lobbyists were trying to approach him. You know what I mean? And they'd be like, well, listen, we really need you to vote blah, blah, blah this way on this. And he's like, there's no authority for that in the Constitution in Article 1, Section 8. And they're like, what the fuck is this guy talking about? Like, what? You're like, he's different than any. And then after all of that, he ends up, when he really didn't want to, running for president twice and spreading our ideas and giving birth to the entire liberty movement and like creating so many more libertarians. And you're telling me after all of that, that I shouldn't have like enormous respect for that guy? And if you're going to like undercut that in any way and be like, oh, that's just, you're hero worshiping. It's like, yeah, dude, this is what a lot of people, and I'm not saying everyone who says this, but a lot of people who say this, it's like, oh yeah, you want just as much respect, even though you've never accomplished anything. So anyway, that's a little bit of a rant, but I'm not that guy. And I don't see anyone else being that guy anytime soon, but that doesn't mean that it's like, you know, some physicist today who's just like, you know, working in a lab is not as great a scientist as Isaac Newton, but that doesn't mean that he can't really even do way more stuff than Isaac Newton did, because he's kind of standing on the shoulders of him, you know? So yeah. Our movement now is standing on the shoulders of Ron Paul. And so maybe we can accomplish way greater things as a movement than he was able to accomplish. So I don't know. I don't know how it's going to be. It should be decentralized. It should be like there's no one like who's the official boss of any of this. But to me, it's like the best takeaway you could have from Ron Paul and the legacy he left is like, you just get up there and tell the truth. And that's what you do. And you tell the truth to as many people as you can. And you keep doing that and just be a really good person while you're doing it, and be good to the people around you. And, you know, and that's the best you can hope for. And if everyone did that, we'd live in a much better world. So you keep setting that example and you keep like pushing forward like that. That's the message that I get from him.
Yeah. You don't have to sell me on the I love Ron Paul, we're talking. This is all sparked by Justin O'Donnell yesterday. He's watching right now. And I like Justin O'Donnell. Justin O'Donnell's a friend.
Me too. Yeah.
And he does stuff like this all the time. Like, this is not his first run at creating sparks, but I think, you know, I agree with what you said about Ron Paul and that he created that moment and we owe him a ton of respect for that. But just like, you know, saying that there won't be another Ron Paul isn't that crazy of a thing. Like, there probably won't be another Donald Trump. Donald Trump was pretty you know, like ridiculously you know, I don't know, significant and one of a kind. You know, he was who was the last president that got elected who hadn't been in politics, you know, just right out of the gate like that? I don't even know who it was.
I think he might be the only president who's ever been elected who had no political or military history. I could be wrong on that.
Military, yeah.
Yeah, had neither.
Abraham Lincoln had no political, I don't think, but he was in the
military. Oh, okay.
So, you're right.
So he was in the military, and we're going back pretty far to Abraham Lincoln. Yeah. So, yeah, no, you're right. You're right about that.
Yeah. So, like, when I feel like Justin did bring up an important conversation, because we do hear, like, all the time, the Ron Paul, like, reawakening the Ron Paul movement. And I think people might just naturally think that it's going to be the exact same way. Like, it's going to be a presidential campaign that just ends up blowing up like Ron Paul's did. And I don't think that's necessarily going to happen. I mean, I want you to run, and I think you'd be the best option for everybody who's talked about it so far, but I don't think it's necessarily going to take off. And everybody seems to be waiting for that to happen. And it's like, just start doing stuff now, you know, like start doing stuff in your own town and your own state, and, you know, start doing a show and start trying to inspire people around you. I mean, it just seems like there's a lot of people who, you know, though Bishop kind of talks about this, like they're wasting a bunch of potential because they're not doing anything. They're just waiting for this movement and awakening to happen. And it might not happen. So, like, it does seem like people are kind of putting all their eggs in one basket, and they think it's just going to be like 2012 again. What do you think about that? Like, do you think there's any, I don't know. Do you think people should be more proactive with what's going on now and, you know, in their local community?
Well, I mean, sure, people should be proactive. And of course, we don't know what the future is going to hold. We don't know what's going to be the thing, you know, that'll really, you know, like that could make things pop, or if there'll be a thing. You know, we don't know any of that. But I don't know if that's completely true. And I mean, I think that, like, I think a lot of people are doing stuff right now. And I also don't, I reject the idea that, like podcasting isn't doing something right now. Like, that's a big thing, you know, like, you know, if someone, it's still so weird how some people like downplay, you know, kind of what podcasting is, but like, if you're reaching new people and spreading ideas, and, you know, if someone had like a show, you know, on primetime CNN that was all about like hardcore libertarian principles, people would be like, holy shit, that's incredible. But yet, you know, I have a show that gets more viewers than half the shows on CNN. And like, so it's like, okay, so why is that not just as important? And it's way better, and it's way longer format and way more in depth and all of this. And lots of people, you and lots of other people, have these shows with sizable audiences. So that's something. I think that, you know, what people in the Mises Caucus are doing are working really hard. I mean, they're really doing a lot of cool stuff. And we're on the verge of like owning a political party that really is going to represent the real type of stuff that the liberty movement wants the Libertarian Party to represent. And I think there's Liberty Republicans who are doing great work. And I think Tho's doing good work, and Eric Brakey's doing good work. And like, and of course, like, you know, Rand Paul and Thomas Massie and all these guys are doing stuff. And then of course, I think people are doing stuff on their community level. And like, so I don't, you know, I mean, there are some people who just tweet about this stuff, but most of the people who I know who are tweeting are, it's not like that's all they're doing. Right. They're like doing a lot of work. So I don't know if I think that's exactly right. I mean, I agree with you. It's like, no, we shouldn't be just sitting around and waiting. But I also do think that, and this is the reason why I'm entertaining this, even though I agree with you, I would really like, even when you said, I think you're the best guy so far, I hope the so far part is true and someone else comes along who I can just support them doing it. But I do know, I mean, I've just seen it already, even just after throwing the idea out and floating it, how much excitement that generates and how much more, like, so many of the huge influencers, if you will, get way more interested in what you're talking about. And I still think, at least in, it might be silly, but at least in the parameters of the world that we exist right now, that is an opportunity to get a whole lot more people, like, and not just like a little bit more people, a whole lot more people to hear about what we would want them to hear about. So again, I think it's all of those things. I don't think there's, you know, it's a false choice to think we need to do one or the other, but certainly I would agree with you. We shouldn't be sitting around waiting for anybody, certainly not me, to just like be the guy who's going to solve all of the problems. And even after that, you know, even if we did reignite the Ron Paul movement, that's not going to solve all of the problems. But the one other thing I'll say is that I think why a lot of us, you know, kind of bring up reigniting the Ron Paul movement, you know, and the revolution and all that so much is only partially because of this kind of like, you know, admiration for what he did and who he is as a person. But I think part of it is also that there are, and this is part of the reason why I, you know, get into the battles that I get into within the liberty movement, is that I think there has been this atrophy in the libertarian movement since 2012. And I think a lot of that is because the people who have been seen as representatives of it have represented something that really isn't what we want them to be. And when you invoke Ron Paul, it's like, if I just say to some random person, I mean, okay, a random person wouldn't know who all these people are, but like, if you say to someone in the political world, you know, what do you think of about when you hear Joe Jorgensen, you know, I don't know, like, what do they think? What's the first thing that people think?
Who?
Usually, yeah. Well, right, who, yeah. Or if they know who, it's like the anti-racism thing, yeah, or the Black Lives Matter stuff, or, you know, if they think about Gary Johnson, they think about Aleppo, or if they think about that, you know, and it's like, but when, yeah, you think wrong, and then also a lot of people think about like the crazy, like kind of left libertarian stuff, or the Cato, you know, the worst of the Cato Institute stuff, or, you know, kind of just the worst of it. But when, yeah, you think Ron Paul, you can't think any of that. When you, sure, think Ron Paul, what you think is like being opposed to the wars and the Federal Reserve and the cronyism and the military-industrial complex and the prison-industrial complex and all the things that we want regular people to think about. So a lot of that is to try to reclaim the term libertarianism and reclaim the liberty movement to be what we want people to think about it. Like, I swear, if nothing else, that's my mission, is that like when people think of libertarianism, they will think of serious things. They will think of, they're not going to think of like, oh, the guy who made a fool out of himself. They're going to think about the people who are right about everything. And that's what, you know, that's what Ron Paul represents to me. Oh, the guy who was preaching about inflation way back then. Okay, well, how are, yeah, you feeling about that now? Oh, yeah, the guy who was preaching that like Afghanistan was going to end in disaster. Oh, okay. Well, yeah, how are you feeling about that now? The guy who right away was against lockdowns and against all this stuff, against the banker bailouts, against like, you know, like, the guy who predicted the financial crash and then predicted that another economic crash was coming. Like, that's what, if nothing else, my mission is to make, to force, you know, through doing as many of these big platforms as possible, to force people that when they think of libertarianism, they are not allowed to just think of the goofy shit. They are compelled to think about the people who warned against all of the things that are destroying this country. That, like, if nothing else, if I can do that, then I think this was all worth it.
Yeah. So 2022 is coming up here pretty fast. I live in Utah. If Mike Lee runs for Senate again, I'm probably going to vote for him. But other than that, sure, I don't really know who I'm going to vote for. And I'm pretty open to voting Libertarian Party. You know, the thing that concerns me is I do think that, I know a lot of people are going to disagree with me on this, but I don't think like lockdowns and COVID restrictions are eternal. I really don't. Like, I think people are just getting sick of it. And I think, especially in the United States, like a couple states might lock down again, but I don't think it's going to be anything like 2020 was ever again. And I actually think there's going to be immense blowback from how the Democrats have acted the last couple of years. And I think there's going to be a red wave next year. And then I'm pretty sure there's going to be a Republican president. I don't even know who the Democrats are thinking of running, but I just can't imagine them winning. You know, like, I remember last year I was thinking, if I were Trump, I would want to lose this election so badly, because there's so much inflation coming down the line. There's so much shit that's going to end up being on the plate no matter what in 2021. And if you're the president, whether or not it's your fault, like, it's, the blame goes on you. So all that to say, like, you know, all this left wing shit really sucks. But I think we're actually looking at a swing in the opposite direction, both governmentally and then also maybe culturally, because they've also overplayed their hand so much. You know, like, even Bill Maher and Jimmy Dore and Shoe on Head and people like that, they're all like, this woke shit is so stupid. Kyle Kulinski's talking about it. Like, all these people who are, you know, Bill Maher's not far left, but those other people who are like pretty far left, like, they've fucking had it. They're sick of it. So it seems to me the moment we're going to be living in is actually swinging in a really right-wing direction. And it's just going to be the pendulum swing. You know, it's just going to be like going back to, you know, not literally going back to 2000 again, but I think in a way it's going to be a cultural swing that way, just like it went right and then it went left really hard. And I think it's just going to go back again. So what do you think the Libertarian Party's purpose should be in 2022? Like what can we do to make a difference there? And do you agree with what I'm saying also?
I definitely agree with part of it. I agree with you that I do think the COVID regime is going to be defeated ultimately. And I don't think we're going to see more lockdowns on a large scale, although we might, as you kind of alluded to, in some specific areas. I think it's going to go the way of the kind of the post 9/11 hysteria. You know, the hysteria is going to die down and eventually people see through how it's all just disaster and there's really nothing to be so scared of. But there will be policy ramifications and we will accept things that, you know, and when I say we, not me and you, but the American people will accept things that they wouldn't have before. That's not guaranteed yet. And we should still be vigilant about doing everything we can to make sure that that is the case. But that would be my guess. If I had to guess right now, I think that COVID is going to be with us basically forever. And I think it's going to get less and less deadly and more contagious. And I think that's just going to be, that's my guess is how it's all going to go. But, you know, there's big money interests behind this new kind of vaccine regime. That's going to be hard to roll back. I think, you know, in terms of like, yes, politically, the Republicans are going to have a huge year. But what does that mean exactly? Does that actually mean there's going to be a swing rightward in the culture? Certainly not necessarily. You know, the Republicans in 2016 took over everything. They had, you know, the House, the Senate, and the presidency, and then were able to add judges to the Supreme Court. That did absolutely nothing to swing the culture in a right-wing direction. If anything, the culture went far, you know, way farther to the left. So I don't know. You know,
I think the one thing is, like, I think the right is vengeful now, where they weren't really against Obama. Like, I mean, they didn't like him, but after Trump and now having Biden in there, like, they want blood, that they didn't before.
Which is funny because they said under Obama that it was all due to racism is why they were so vengeful, but now they're even more vengeful against Joe Biden. But, you know, it's but I agree with you on that. I think the woke thing is like, it's
and also the woke thing that took off, like, I mean, that's been building, but it got really bad under Trump. It was just ridiculous.
Yes. Well, it was almost created in a way in the popularized mainstream way in Obama's second term. And then when Trump came in, it just like got exponentially worse. But the truth is that, you know, Bill Maher and all these people like being against it, it's like, yeah, look, wokeism in general is very unpopular, even amongst the left. Right. Like the left half of America doesn't like it. It's a tiny sliver. Of people who don't. However, they have all of the most powerful interests have thrown all of their chips in on it. And so that's now the question is, how conformist are people as a society? Like how much are they willing to conform to something they don't really believe in? And that's kind of a different question.
Do you think they could pivot like they did, because the interests were in different things 20 years ago, and then it was not even 20 years ago, more like 15 years ago. And then they saw the writing on the wall. Oh, if we get behind this, then we'll have a lot more power. Do you think they might just do that again?
Like, it's possible. It's certainly possible. I mean, look, you already see a major pivot when Black Lives Matter really started opposing the vaccine mandates, how quickly the corporate press and the corporate world just didn't even like address that. It's like, oh, yeah, that's not you. That's nice when you were like our little pets, but we're looking for pharmaceutical profits right now. Like, we don't really care about, you know, oh, okay, whatever. So, yeah, it's possible. But I do think that, like, it's possible, but I also think that we need as much pressure on that as we can possibly muster up in order to make that happen. And so that's another part of, like, when you were talking about with the libertarian culture stuff, like, there's, it's fine that we have, like, many different cultures within libertarianism. In fact, I think that's great in a lot of ways, but the woke shit cannot coexist with the rest. And you see that all the time, like in these arguments, like the rest of us can all have like honest disagreements and kind of talk about like, well, I see it this way, I see it this way. But the woke like culture, even within the libertarian world, are the ones who just cannot, I mean, like no matter what you say, have to immediately start like throwing these hissy fits of like, you're a Nazi and you're a racist and you're this. And like, that is, it's such a destructive force. And there's no intelligent discourse that can be had with that. Nothing productive can come with those people. I mean, those type of people. And if anyone isn't, I know I'm using the term woke a lot, but all I mean by this is like a hysteria of, you know, accusations of racism, homophobia, transphobia, Nazism, all of these things where it makes absolutely no sense to apply them. That type of hysteria needs to go. And the people who have succumbed to that need to either sober up or they need to get out of the way. There's really just no other option with that. But I do think that there's within, like my prediction for just the Libertarian Party and Libertarian movement, but specifically the Libertarian Party world, is that I actually think we're going to clean that up very well over the next year. And that I think we've already been moving in that direction, but it's really, you're going to watch this all kind of have a radical transformation where I think the Libertarian Party is going to be the perhaps the first ever de-wokeified institution in the West. And I think that is going to, in a lot of ways, we're going to present a roadmap for other institutions of exactly how to do this.
Yeah. So you're talking internally, the Libertarian Party will be functional. What about externally? What do you think we can do next year? Anything, or do we have to fix ourselves first?
I think that there's well, I think we have to fix ourselves first. And I think that's what the mission is first at hand. And that's what I think anybody who is in the Libertarian Party, who's listening to this, you know, anyone who's on board with the Mises Caucus or just on board with what we are saying, I go, right now is the time. Right now is the time to really double down your efforts in every way possible. Like if you're, you know, like if you're going to be a delegate, make sure you're going to be a delegate. If you're giving $10 a month to the Mises Caucus, try to make it 15, like whatever you can do. Right now is the time. Like right now we need to like do everything we can in these upcoming conventions, get as many delegates as we can, go to Reno. Angela McArdle's going to be the next chair of the party, but we need to make sure that that happens. And once that happens, it's kind of like, I think the whole tone of this thing is going to be different. I think a lot of the very destructive people are going to leave. And I don't just mean like loser brigade type people. I mean like the people who are like trying to do all this shady shit right now to rob Delaware of their seats and all of this other stuff. I think all of that is going to kind of recede to the background. And then once we've got that, once we've gotten that taken care of, and we can be kind of like something like the Ron Paul movement, something like the Liberty movement is supposed to be, and have this organization, which I think in many ways is the most powerful organization within the libertarian world. I think there's really no ceiling on how much potential we have to influence the culture and to influence people and to let them know, listen, man, there is such an enormous percentage of the population right now who hates Democrats and Republicans and only likes Republicans because they're just not quite as bad as the Democrats. You know what I mean? And like this is a huge percentage of the population. And I think that our job is to reach out to all of them and to, you know, do what libertarians do best, which is tell the truth and explain to them what's really causing all these problems. And so I think we have enormous potential to do that. I'm very, very optimistic about what we can do very, very soon in the next few years.
Yeah. So I had Tho on the show last night, had a great conversation with him. And I told him, you know, I don't want you to become a libertarian, actually. I think you should be a Republican. I think Andrew from Popular Liberty should be a Republican. And then some of the people who have left and gone to the Green Party, I think that's what they should do.
Yeah.
I have, that's a change. Like a year ago, I was kind of like, I want everybody who's remotely libertarian to join the party so we can actually get something done. But I've realized that that's not an effective way to grow your platform, because people are only inspired if you have something worthy to say, or and if you actually stand for something. So if you're just kind of like, yeah, well, as long as you're, you know, sort of okay on this stuff and you kind of agree with us that you're sort of anti-coercion and you're sort of anti-war, like, cool, then you're one of us. Yeah. I think it's really important that if you're going to be, at least if you're going to be any sort of leader or active member of the Libertarian Party, you should probably care about libertarian stuff before you care about Republican or Democrat stuff, you know, because and you actually told this to me, because I think Tulsi might end up becoming a Republican at this point, but I remember like, I wanted her to become a libertarian and you said, you know, maybe she should just stay a Democrat and make the Democrats better. Like, I've really accepted that that's true. And, you know, with her, I don't know what she's going to do because of the direction she's going. But with, like, you know, Jimmy Dore shouldn't become a libertarian. He should stay right where he is and he can influence people in his own way. You know, Bill Maher on the anti-woke stuff, or the couple get on, you know, any of them, like
that's great.
They are, and yeah,
well, look, the way I look at it is like, someone's got to be the best left winger and someone's got to be the best right winger. Right. You know, like, we need that too. It can't all just be people like in our little world. And sometimes even with someone who I admire so much, you know, which is Glenn Greenwald, but sometimes he's like gotten, and I understand why, because he's right about everything. Well, not everything, but he's right about all the stuff he talks about the most. Yeah. He's, you know, and so his thing that animates him the most is being against like the national security state and against the military industrial complex and all of this. And they've all kind of switched over, you know, the biggest proponents of it have switched over to the Democrats. And so he's just constantly blasting the Democrats and constantly. And now everyone's like, well, he's basically a right winger. And I'll watch, and he's like a socialist, I think, at heart. And sometimes I wish he would just say some more left-wingy shit, even shit I disagree with. But you're like, just remind everyone that you're a left-winger. Like, remind them that you're not a right-winger, that you're the best left-winger. Because then you can, like, attack them from the left. And so I think there's value in all of this stuff. And as far as, like, libertarians go, you know, it's debatable. Me and Scott talk about this all the time, but, like, it is possible that we would be better off if we would pick one strategy and all of us would do it. You know, like if we all joined the Libertarian Party, or we all joined the Republican Party, or maybe if we all moved to New Hampshire and were the free part of the Free State Project, or maybe we all like it's our, or if we all just talked about nothing else except vaccine passports, or if we all just talked about nothing else except the war in Yemen. Like, it is possible that you could argue that if we all did one thing and followed the one strategy that one guy picks, this would be more efficient. But the reality is that that's not going to happen. That's just not going to happen, particularly with libertarians. We're just not going to, no one's ever going to be the guy who convinces everyone to do that. So maybe we should just accept that we're going to operate from this decentralized division of labor, you know, specialization kind of area, and different people are going to do what they do best. And that's, I mean, it's the reality. So we might as well embrace it and go with it. But I don't know, me personally, I'm not really trying to convince anyone who's like, I mean, I guess like there are people I'm trying to convince to join the Libertarian Party, but if people are like dead set on like, no, I'm going to be a Liberty Republican, like, okay, great. I hope you're the best Liberty Republican out there. Or if someone were, even like if like fucking the people I am not a big fan of in the Libertarian Party, when they leave, a bunch of them have already, and when the rest of them leave, like the real deranged ones, I hope they go to the Green Party and make them a little bit better on something. I hope they go to the, you know, they go to the Green Party and try to convince them to be a little bit less socialist on one thing. Okay, whatever. That in many ways, I think that's kind of where they belong. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's like, maybe you could actually do something good there. Like, instead of just like kind of trying to tear down every leader in this movement, go try to support one of their leaders and make them if you make them 1 inch better on something, maybe that helps in some way. I don't know. But to me, the reason why I'm sticking with this strategy is because what the way I'm built and what I'm good at doing is like I tell the truth. And I don't even mean that to be like, you know, like I'm not saying that they from their perspective aren't telling the truth, but I'm not really, even though there's like I'm floating the idea of running and like all this stuff, but I'm not really a political animal and I wouldn't be running as a political animal. Like I like to tell the truth, and that's what I think someone needs to do. And I wish someone else would be there who I thought could like do it better. And then I would just get right behind them like I did with Ron Paul, like I would have when I was lobbying hard for Tom Woods to run in 2016 and in 2020, but he doesn't want to do it. So, you know, but like, that's what I like. And what I see just too much, but I'm not really capable of like going and just kind of being like, well, I'll kind of like just pander to the right wingers a little bit. And where's, you know, I'll get annoyed anytime. It's like, no, I'm going to tell them when they're fucking up too. And also the truth is that all those guys, like, I don't even like calling them Praxians or they're Liberty Republicans. We're all Praxians. There's nothing new to like believing in like putting these plans into action. That's what we've all been. That's what the libertarian movement's been debating for fucking 40 years. Right. There's nothing new about that. But if you look at all of those guys, I talk to my more right wingers than any of them. There's not one of them who has more influence on right wingers than I do. Or even close, like that's just the reality of the situation. Like not even close. And I'm able to talk to them, and not all of them leave the Republican Party necessarily, but they listen to what I have to say because I'm telling them the truth, and they respect that. And so I just don't agree with this thing where it's like if I make a criticism of the Republican Party that they know is completely right, they still have to go, oh, why would you criticize them? They're the only opposition in town and all of this. It's like, dude, that's just not, I don't think that's our role. That's my thing. I think someone's got to stand up and tell the truth. Someone's got to not just pretend that their side is completely right. Someone's got to be honest about this. And the Republican Party is, I'm not doing the thing that a lot of libertarians do where they'll be like, well, they're all the same. I'm not saying that. No, the Republicans are better. They're better than the Democrats. At least as of right now, they're better than the Democrats.
Yep.
Yeah. But what does that mean? Being better than the Democrats?
Right.
Like that's supposed to be, that's enough.
And it's also Jesus. Right now, like you said.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. And who knows? Who knows what comes tomorrow, you know?
Yeah.
But so that's like, to me, I think there's like, I think there's real power in that. And watch, man, like I'll tell you, like I really think, and whether or not I run, that there's nothing to do with me. I just think what the Mises Caucus is doing, I look at so many of these people who are like agorists or even Liberty Republicans and stuff like that. And I'm telling you, it's like, and I take this on. I remember saying this when the first time I did your show with Jeremy and David Feit, when we all did it, where I said, look, it's the job of the people and the candidates in the Libertarian Party to convince everyone else that you should support them because they're that damn good.
Right.
And I'm telling you, I really believe that over the next year, a lot of these people, I don't even care if you vote, forget voting. You're just going to love it. You're going to love what we're doing. And you're going to be like, yeah. And when you're talking about this stuff with whatever influence you have, you're going to be like, you know, in the same way that even someone who didn't believe in voting, but when Ron Paul was running, but it's like, they'd be like, it's just like Ron Paul said. Yeah. How many anarchists and agorists and all of this have been like, it's just like Ron Paul said, you know, it's like, so that's what I want us to be. The ones who, even all of you guys who are like maybe a little bit skeptical about the LP thing, do go, yeah, they were right about that. Or this one guy, he really said it the right way. And that's, you know, so I think we're going to do that. And we're going to, but we've already inspired so many people to join and created such a thing here. And I think it's just going to be, I think it's going to be great.
Yeah. You got a few minutes to answer some super chats?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. We got Justin O'Donnell. I'm a true atheist. I don't even worship heroes. Justin. Let's see. We got Jose Gallison of No Way Jose. Hey, everyone. Go.
Gallison is the pronunciation.
Go. By the way, he's. I think he's been bugging you to get back on. I was supposed to pass that message on. So
yes, I will. I will. I'd be happy to go back on. I told him that too. He's just you gotta just keep bugging me. But I will go back on your show.
I mean, you gotta kind of ignore Jose sometimes too. He's a little bit annoying. So you know, I'm conflicted.
I love Jose.
Yeah, I do too. I'm conflicted. I'm an agorist, but as a host of Tower Power Hour, Dave running will be great for Tower Power Hour when the smear campaigns start.
I mean, I hate to burst your bubble, Jose, but I think they got a lot of shit on me before they ever get to Tower Power Hour. But if that's what comes, I hope it gives you guys some eyeballs.
Thoughts on HR 550 passing, funding of vaccine database. Was that what the 80 Republicans voted mm-hmm. for?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like, it is what it is. This is like the next step of what they're doing. You know, of course they promise their whole thing is like, I saw Dan Crenshaw was trying to like defend it, and he's like, well, no, we funded this because they promise it'll be anonymous. And you're like, yeah, well, that's exactly what the NSA started, you know, with their whole promise was that it'll all be anonymous. And it's like, okay, yeah, but you know, I'd rather just absolutely know collecting of this information. I don't know if I have much more thoughts on that other than it does expose how much, you know, like bipartisan support there was. And there was this kind of classic Washington, D.C. move where they do this thing where even the Republicans who voted against it or abstained from voting, you know how it works in Washington, like they all kind of do it once they know it has the votes to pass. So it's like, you know, enough of them vote for it. And then the rest are like, yeah, this is really going to cost me in my district. So if you can get the vote over here or something over there, fine. And then I'm sure there are some principled people who voted against it. But yeah, nothing good.
Let's see. Dave, do you think the post-liberal right is better than the neocons or worse? Also, is the future of the GOP going to be this post-liberal right?
Well, I don't know exactly what you mean by the post-liberal right. Do you mean like kind of the populist Trump?
That's kind of what I think he means, yeah.
Oh, there's no question they're better than the neocons. I mean, there's
worse than the neocons.
By no metric are they worse. I mean, I think that, like from my perspective, the neocons were essentially what the worst left wing caricature of the alt-right was in reality, if they had power. You know, like whatever anyone like some crazy, you know, woke, you know, or even a woke like libertarian or any of them would say about the alt-right, that's what the neocons were, except with power. Right. And they were, down to the point that they were ethno-nationalists only for Israel. You know what I mean? Like only for they were like the American vanguard for Israel, and that's what they were and still are to this day. And so yeah, they literally believed in an ethno state. They were even on the areas where the left will say, oh my God, Trump is so outrageous. This is one of the great things that Horton was able to nail Bill Kristol on in that debate. They were way worse. They were way more nationalist, way more racist, played on xenophobia and bigotry way worse than Trump does. And with the intention of using it to start a war. Not to like say we're not letting people into the country. There was really something for someone my age who really lived through and paid attention to the Bush-Cheney years to watch all of these neocons all of a sudden go, oh, yeah, you can't demonize Muslims this way. They were fine with demonizing Muslims when that would lead to just like, you know, carpet bombing, or maybe not carpet bombing, but whatever, drone bombing, you know, dropping hellfire missiles on Muslim women and children. That was fine. But as soon as you said, oh, well, there's a ban on them immigrating into the country when that didn't fit with the agenda, then it was like, this is racism and horrible. So look, just by any like by any fair metric, there's been nothing worse than the wars overseas and what the neocons have done. And the only thing after that, I mean, the worst thing you could say about the populist right would be that their leaders, you know, like Trump and guys like that, completely failed them and didn't live up to what they wanted, and that he completely, you know, cucked, to borrow their words, to the COVID regime. But there's no question that the right wing has gotten better over the last 15 years in America. I don't know, post-liberal, like, what does post-liberal even mean? Dude, motherfucker, we've been post-liberal since 1913. There's nothing new about being post-liberal. You know what I mean? Like, if you're talking about Mises, liberal, John Stuart Mill's liberal, then we've been post-liberal for a very, very long time, certainly since World War One. And so are they any more post-liberal? The neocons, there was nothing in the positive sense of the word, nothing liberal about the neocons.
Yeah. Top Lobster. By the way, guys, go follow all my Tower Gang homies. That's Clint Russell from Liberty Lockdown. Top Lobster is, you know, he does tons of artwork for us. He's been on the show a bunch. Jose Gallison, already been on here. Toad, Anarcho Toad on Twitter, go follow him. Fat Dave, who's upset that you haven't followed him back, by the way, Dave. I know he would want to say that, but you probably like...
Is he?
Any words for Fat Dave?
I will never follow you, Fat Dave. I will never follow you again. Now, I didn't even know you were gone and back, but now you're done. Never.
There you go.
What is his... I'm just kidding. What's his new account?
It's funnier, or no, he changed it. I won't say the old name because you'd get offended. So it's
wait, what was the old name?
It's funnier than Dave.
Oh, really? But look who's begging for a follow. The funnier than Dave.
It's Tower King Cole is his at now, I believe. So everyone go follow him. We all got nuked. I got nuked. Josh Smith, he's another guy. He got nuked. Jose got nuked.
Somehow I'm hanging on. It's only a matter of time till I get fucking nuked. So I'm going to need all you people to fucking build me back up once I get there. God damn, it's going to be so annoying when I have to fucking start over from zero. But I did lose like 1,000 followers like the other day. There's been some
Twitter survived that somehow. And I was like posting about Epstein last night. And I also have changed my name to Reed Coverdale again. And I was like, okay, I'm probably gone, but I made it somehow. But anyway, we got Top Lobster here. Thoughts on Florida State Militia. So I don't know if you know much.
Yeah.
About it. So Oklahoma, they were like threatening them. If you don't do vaccine mandates, we're going to disassociate you from the federal National Guard and you're going to have a state militia. I thought that was also what was going on in Florida, but apparently it's not. Apparently this is an extra thing that is just 200 people, I think, that DeSantis is.
Yeah. It's
a task force.
Right. It seems pretty small right now, but it's a pretty interesting move to kind of create a militia that DeSantis is like essentially, I think, the commander in chief of. So it's just an interesting move because DeSantis really, even though there's other places that are resisting this stuff. And even, you know, if you look at like South Dakota, other places that were better policy wise than even Florida was. He's the guy who's in the crosshairs. And so it is a real interesting move to see him kind of like trying to build up a little bit of a thing here. I'm all for it. We'll see what happens. I still think the idea of, I think as much as many libertarians might like it on a philosophical and practical level, secession is going to be a very tough thing to actually happen, but it'll be interesting to see if like this is kind of his first attempt at building a show of force, like you can't come in here and enforce shit that we don't want you to. So we'll see.
Yeah. All right, man. Well, I've had you over an hour, so I'll let you go. Thanks for coming on. We will both be in Tucson, Arizona on January 16th and 17th, I think. So make sure everybody who's watching, if you're going to be in Arizona, come hang out with us. But I don't know. You make me optimistic whenever I talk to you, man. I hope you're right. I mean, you have been kind of right. Like, I wasn't really on board with you a year ago, and here I am. I'm
there. We go.
Side with you, so I am optimistic going forward. But anything else you want to say? Anything you want to plug? I got your Twitter and everything in the description. But I don't know if you got any events coming up around the corner or anything.
No, I mean, I'm going to be at a whole bunch of libertarian conventions. I'm trying to work out all the details right now. But like you said, Arizona, I'm going to be at the Colorado, the Connecticut, the Pennsylvania, California. Probably a few more. I think Texas. I'm going to be at a bunch of these libertarian conventions. To me, this is it. This is like what we've been working for a long time is like really happening right now. And it's all about getting Angela McArdle in there. And I'll just plug her basically and just say that, like, dude, you know, for anybody who's interested in the Libertarian Party, I mean, we have like such a great candidate to be the chair of the party. And I think that so much, this is going to change the whole dynamic and just like put all of the kind of petty shit behind us and be like, okay, now we have like our person at the driver's seat. And now we're really ready to be a force. And I really think the sky's the limit. You know, Angela, dude, she's just like, she's awesome. It's not just like, I'm trying to build her up because I want my person to be in there. She is that chick. Like she is, she works her ass off. She's smart as shit. She's principled as shit. She's fierce. She's like everything you'd want out of someone in this position. And I think she's primed to go take it. But right now is the time. Go do anything you can to help her. And that's it. And thank you, brother. I always enjoy talking to you, man. So let's do it again soon.
All right, man. Thanks.